Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am your erstwhile host, Barnabas Piper, here without Ted Cluck, who is off doing, I don't know what Ted is doing. He's probably resting after a super busy Easter, even though he's not a pastor. And yet somehow, the resident man of the cloth, Ronnie Martin, did join me for this podcast, even post-Easter, even post the busiest week of a pastor's life. How are you, Ron?
I'm doing good, man.
Really? You survived? You survived the 11 services, the egg drop, the... I mean, I'm assuming you had helicopters involved. You might have brought in an NFL player. You did all of it, right?
Yeah, we had Derwin Gray come in to do the helicopter drop for us. So everything went off.
Derwin Gray dropped a helicopter. That's what I heard.
Derwin Gray dropped out of a helicopter holding Easter eggs, and then everybody jumped on him and stole the eggs from it. Well, I don't know what happened. It was something like that.
Look, every other way of doing it has already been tried. You got to try something new. I prefer, but everybody tackled Derwin Gray. That sounds fun. We should go.
I don't know. We're trying to put a twist on it. We're trying to put a flip on it, you know, because it's crazy, you know.
What did you actually do for Easter?
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, we did what we do, I don't know, every week. We had a church service, and that's what we did. We also had a Good Friday service, which means we had something else, you know, in terms of servicing during the week. But that's what we did. That's what we had. It was a church service.
And how many letters of complaint did you get that you did not provide, you know, special treatment for all of the small children and everybody else, and there wasn't enough pastel colors, and you didn't wear a bow tie? And I mean, I feel like maybe you shortchanged the people of your church.
Dude, you know what? I know I did, because what we've done since day one is just had a policy of shortchanging so that nobody will complain when they're actually being shortchanged.
Policy of poverty, is that that's sort of written into your bylaws?
I mean, I'm not saying we're Platt and Frankie Chan. I'm not saying we're doing anything like that. But it's I don't know. Nobody seemed disappointed. I don't typically get letters from anybody of complaints, and it's not because we're so amazing. You know, it just doesn't really. It's not part of our culture. Maybe it's because we're a church plant. I don't know. But
how old is your church now?
6 years.
When do you stop calling yourself a church plant and start calling yourself a church?
Well, we stopped. Yeah, we officially crossed over into actual, real, legitimate church status after, I think, like a year and a half, 2 years with our denomination. So at some point, like we crossed this like threshold. I don't know what it is or what it means. It means we're self-sustaining, I think, is what it means.
Yeah, like potty training is to a toddler what growing out of church plant is to a church. It's like three-ish years old, and you know, now what? Guess what? You're old enough to take care of this yourself.
Yeah, I think it's – yeah, exact. I think it's as soon as you're not depending on outside funding to keep the ball rolling, I think that's when you go into, you know, official, hey, look, Ma, we're a real church status.
But I think some churches really like to keep the church plant status because it allows them to basically it's kind of like – perpetual adolescence, you know, like when a 27-year-old still acts like a 14-year-old, and they're like, "Well, I'm still kind of finding myself and growing up." I'm like, no, you're a grown up, and you need that.
Oh,
like,
dude, yeah,
it's the same thing in churches.
It's a massive. Well, here's the thing, right? It's a like in our denom, it's kind of a thing, right? Like these dudes that want to, you know, these dudes that want to just like hang on and be perpetual. Hey, we need funding church plants, and they're going on like year eight. And it's like, dude, you need to, like, at some point you need to embrace like a reality that like you're moved out of mom and dad's house, you have a job, you're supporting your family, like you're doing this thing, right?
You're leasing your very own warehouse.
Exactly.
You're doing just fine. So I'm still baffled by this lack of Easter festivities, because everything I saw online was that every church was the busiest week of the year, and pastors are just slammed and overbooked, and it's like their Super Bowl. I've heard it described that way. For you, Ron, that's a sports event that happens.
Yeah, that just sounds deplorable to even describe it that way to me, but carry on.
But this is common, and this is not like – there's a whole category of pastors we make fun of regularly for a variety of reasons, like the sneakers they wear, for example.
Totally.
This is much beyond that. This is in the realm of pastors who we would have great respect for, aside from calling Easter the Super Bowl.
It's global, yeah.
What is the deal? Who were the ad wizards who came up with this one, as Jerry Seinfeld once said? Like, what? I don't get it. What's the deal with the busiest week of the year for pastors when clearly you can just do a church service? I don't understand the phenomenon.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's why I brought it up. I was going to ask you. I want to ask anybody. In fact, I'm getting ready to head to.
This could be a really fruitless conversation if we're both like, I don't know. What about
you? Well, no, I mean, we're going to have to make some wild guesses here. Okay. I'm getting ready to head to a sojourn retreat, which should not be shocking to you or any of our listeners. And
Ted was here to make fun of you and luxuriate with you. On the other hand, will ignore it.
But I'm going to ask a bunch of these dudes because I don't like all the hype, right? And so, like, what I don't like are like these cliches that, like, you know, so I got dudes writing me this week on Tuesday saying, "Hey, man, do you have a minute? Can we chat?" But I get it if you're just so busy. And I'm like, dude, it's Tuesday. I'm preaching on Sunday, like I do every week. Like, and yeah, I have things to do, but like, why would I be more busy this week? And like, I just the whole phenom of like Easter week being the craziest week, like, you know, of all the weeks in the pastoral calendar year.
I know. I mean, does it?
I don't know.
Does the worship band do 11 times as many songs? Do you preach 7 sermons instead of one?
Okay, you're onto something there. So the only thing I can say is that I know that some churches, especially the ones that are big, you know, they start doing their Easter services like on Thursday night or whatever.
That's right. It's Monday, Thursday, Easter. It's Good Friday, Easter.
Totally. But like, I don't know. Like, we're not doing, you know, we still just had one service because we're not big. But we had a lot more people on Sunday than we normally do. But we didn't need to expand to 2 services. But I know if you're like a mega church, you know, you do like 9 services. So I don't know, that does add a lot of extra work on the weekend. There's no doubt. Maybe the band, because of that, they have to do a lot of extra work. Maybe it's because there's a Good Friday service. Not all churches do a GF. We do. But it was an hour long service. Sunday was the shortest service we've done, I think, since we started. I preached a 25-minute message. It was shorter. Like, it was easier, Pipe. It was less.
Yeah, you looked out there and you were like, wait, half of these people are not used to my 57-minute sermons. I better cut this thing in half.
Totally. That's exactly what I did because I wanted to have mercy on everybody.
And you wanted to go eat lunch.
So. And I wanted to have lunch, right? So, I mean, it was like – so for me, like, with the exception of Good Friday, which was just, okay, we're having another service on Friday – I'm at a total loss other than I feel like in our thing here, everybody just wants to, any excuse they can conjure up to say, oh dude, life is crazy.
Right.
Life is crazy busy, as KDY would say. Like they want to overhype. And I'm like, dude, but I don't know why. Like I'm still at a loss. Pipe, I mean, you're at Ortland's church. How crazy was it? How much crazier was it?
Well, I will say this. I went in and had lunch with our 2 main pastors on Good Friday to talk about some planning things.
Dude, that's big. That's outrageous, too.
And,
it was Good
and
Friday.
And so it means one of 2 things. Either I'm super, super special, so they made time for me. Or, more likely, they're not obnoxiously busy as compared to other weeks. I think it's probably the latter. And so we did a Good Friday service, which is it's a really stripped down service in a really nice sort of reflective way. So it's a somber service. It has communion. Ray gave like a, I'd say 15-20 minutes sort of more reflection than sermon. And then, you know, there's a handful of songs, but it wasn't a full band. It was just 3 people. Acoustic, so
yeah,
kind of keep it simpler for the musicians, and then we did. Normally, we only have 1 service on Sundays. We did 2, just because mainly because the parking and the kids' facilities get overwhelmed fast if it's a full service. So, and both services were full, but not over full, and they were great, but also not, you know, it didn't feel like a big blowout extravaganza. Just a really, you know, joyful worship service. So, but then I have friends who are pastors at, you know, larger mega churches, and they're like renting out the civic center in their town, and they're doing multiple services there. And I saw a listener sent in, they're like, hey, Hillsong is requiring people to get tickets to their service to reserve their spot. Like, you don't have to pay for it, but you have to reserve your spot. That's the insanity to me.
Dude, that's outrageous, Pipe. That is, I mean, is that a real thing?
Yes. It's a real thing. I mean, and some of these churches, like the Hillsong one, okay, we called them out by name because they fall in that category of churches we poke at with some consistency. The other churches I will not name because they're actual friends, and they're still like, they, you know, it's a good-sized church. It's a few thousand-person church. I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 people. And but they do multiple services at like the convention center or the civic center or something like that, so that they can fit like 10,000 people at once. And I think they do multiple services there. And I just want to be like, why don't you just do it at your church and tell people to go find somewhere else to go? Like, I don't, or I don't understand that monster facility mentality. That seems crazy. And yeah, in that case, I can see why it would be busy because the logistics of that are a nightmare.
Dude, yeah. So, I mean, that's what I was going to say. So I don't want to be like all super ignorant about the whole thing. We're smaller, so we don't have the same, you know, we're not dealing with the same logistics and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of the dudes I'm talking to are either smaller than I am, not much bigger than I am. And it's still like it's the mentality of like, dude, don't even think about bugging me this week because this week's crazy. To which my question is, you got to define crazy for me this week.
How much of it is, it's the aura, you know? So it's kind of like knowing that your favorite preacher is going to be sitting in the audience. So you're like, you're doing the exact same thing you do every Sunday. You're going to prepare a sermon. You're going to study the Bible. So there's just pressure. In this case, it's like everybody's bringing friends and family. There's people who are coming who go to church twice a year. It's this time. And then it's to like the Christmas cantata and that's it. And is it that pressure? Because if you sat down and were like, all right, let's do a numbered list of all the things you do this week and all the things you do every other week, for small and mid-sized churches, the list can't be that different.
Yeah, it just can't be. Well, it's not for us. But here's the thing. So you just keyed in on something that I think is real, which is the pressure. Because I used to be at bigger churches even at bigger churches that I was at, it wasn't like the week was crazier, but there was that weirdo just pressure, almost like, you know, you better not screw this one up. Like everything is hinging on, you know, on the service going off well, to which it's just that I still don't even like
doesn't
get that vibe.
Doesn't that feel so just backwards?
The opposite of what we're trying to do.
Right. Ever? I mean, it's like the difference between people who are throwing a party, you know, like they're going to throw a big Christmas party and they're so excited that everybody's coming over. And so kind of however it goes, it's going to be fun because totally. They're excited and there's food and there's drinks and there's good company. And then the person who's trying to plan the party, who's so overwrought that every little detail be right and the place settings be perfect and the centerpiece is out of whack and the wreath is crooked. And that ruins the party kind of no matter how well it goes.
Dude, I know.
I feel like that's what churches do with Easter. They basically ruin it for themselves.
They Martha out, just to get biblical. Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. So this is what we did. So I hate all that pressure-y, pastel-y, like everybody's, you know, kind of, no pun, walking on eggshells around. Like everything's
going to – Yeah, after you drop them from a helicopter, you're going to walk on them. That's how
After Derwin drops holding the basket of Easter eggs. But so this is what I said from the platform. I said, hey, I recognize there's a lot of new faces. And I'm like, hey, thanks for being here. We're glad you joined us. Just so you know, like what you're going to experience this morning is what you'll experience every Sunday. Like we're not really like putting on the dog here or anything like that. So welcome. If you'd like to join us again, you're not getting something that's not going to be repeated. This is it.
Right.
This is what we do. This is who we are. But I wanted to say that because it's like I know so many churches, like you'll go there on Easter and they gloss it up and they're dousing you with like chocolate eggs the whole time. And it's like, dude, that's not going to happen any other Sunday of the week. Right.
And then the following Sunday at larger churches I've been at, so they do that. And then the next Sunday, like the worship, there's like one hungover worship leader with his tailor up there doing like four songs. And then the pastor's like, all right, I'm going to give you 15 mediocre minutes and let's all leave. And so if somebody decided to stick around after Easter, they're getting it's like the hair of the dog. service after Easter.
I know. I mean, there's like some truth to that. And I'll tell you, this is what I want, Pipe. What I want is I want to get some of our listeners who are pastors, after they listen to this podcast, man, I want to get them to post and say, my Easter week was totally normal. That's what I want to hear from them. If you had a really, if you had the most normal Easter week, with the exception that it was Easter, we want to hear from you. Just admit, man, it was a regular
week.
And
if you were insanely busy, we don't want to hear from you.
Yeah,
because we already heard from you. It's all over. It's all over Twitter. We heard already. Good job.
It's not busier because there's more, because you've decided to put more pressure on yourself. That doesn't make it.
Jesus didn't rise from the dead so you could put more pressure on yourself. That's not how that works.
Dude, yeah, wow. Pipe, that's big, man. What you just said is big. That preaches right there. Wow.
I kind of meant it tongue in cheek, but also.
No, I know, but that was serious. I know. But you went there. It was big. So yeah.
All right. Well, let's pivot to a second topic, still church related, because everybody just saw their church's A-list worship teams playing their best music. They probably all played, I don't know. What is the quintessential Easter song that gets played at every church? Is there one?
Dude,
is it Christ the Lord is Risen Today?
Yeah, we actually did that for the first time, actually. We did like a modern-y version of it.
Well, that's because you're a grown-up church now.
Yeah, I know.
You did it. Good job. You moved on.
And it's been stuck in my head for
2 days,
and I'm just bummed that we did, because it's like the worst. If you could pick one worst song, like, Pipe, what would be the worst worship song to get stuck in your head? To me, that's in the top three for sure.
Yeah, that's it.
It's pretty bad.
I don't like that one much. That's true.
I don't know if anybody does.
Yeah, we'd have to chew on it to come up with the worst one. But so Sunday was the A-list worship team. We had a listener send in a question, speaking of churches, worship teams, music, A-listers, etc., saying kind of what's the deal with churches putting out worship albums? What do we think about that? He said he kind of feels weird about it. He didn't make a definitive, like, it's stupid statement, but it was definitely sort of that seems weird. Then he made it personal because he mentioned that he used to attend the church where I am now, and our church last fall put out a worship recording of, you know, 8 or 9 yeah. songs. It was a live recording, yeah, yeah. So with the congregation there. And so as a former man of music, or a man in the music industry, you're still a man of music, let's be honest.
Sure.
And also a church leader, what are your thoughts, feelings, contentions, criticisms, whatever, about churches putting out worship albums?
Yeah, I think like the typical thing that our listeners would probably think is we'd be all anti it. I don't care. Number two, I actually think it can be a really good idea. If you put it out there in terms of it being a resource for your congregation, mm-hmm. and you're singing a lot of the songs that you put on it, especially if you're a church that writes a lot of originals, it's just a way for your congregation to like listen to what you sing on Sundays, know the songs better, enjoy them. I think it's fine. And again, like putting out records and recording now because of home recording is easier than ever to get really nice sounding recordings. So, you know, unlike what we do here on the podcast probably, but generally
it's so
speaking,
easy to do that we haven't even done it yet.
That we've never even delved
we've
into
never
like
even
nice
tried.
Recordings.
That's right.
But yeah, I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's something worthy for, like, if you have a full-time worship guy to maybe spend his time doing, you know, occasionally is put out a recording of everything they do, especially if you got a lot of great musicians and you got a band that really has established a particular sound. It's fine.
I think so. One of the things you said that I resonate completely with. So I'll take it one step further, and I'll say it's not only fine. I think it's great. I love it when churches do this. As long as a significant number of the songs they're doing are original compositions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I think that's such a fantastic way. Well, first of all, I will say any music, any worship music coming out of a church, I am more inclined to like than something coming out of a record label.
Yeah.
Because that's not worship music. That's commercial. That's just commercial junk with some like Jesus glitter sprinkled on it to make it shiny and pretty and fool the people at K-Love. Like it's not actual worship music. Whereas you listen to stuff that comes out of churches who are intentionally writing, composing music, thinking, how can we lead our congregation in worship? How can we do something that supports a sermon series or that walks people through a book of the Bible or things like that? Those are always better songs, you know. And honestly, the musicians are of professional quality too, because your famous worship musicians who are with record labels are not better musicians than any number of worship leaders and worship bands. They're just not. And so, like,
it
the
is
one,
what it is. Yeah.
The one musicians that Emmanuel put out, I really like it. Austin Stone does great stuff. You are part of the Sojourn Network. There's more than one church in Sojourn that puts these out. There's a church called Red Mountain in Birmingham, which is one of the first churches I know of who did this. They do a lot of kind of revising old hymns and putting new tunes to it. So generally speaking, I think it's great. The only downside is if there are commercial aspirations.
Well, and I think that's what's going to take the hit. And it's like, so then you get into the idea of, okay, so are we going to release, how are we going to release it? You know, Sojourn got super hipster and used to put out vinyls. But I think it was because a lot of the people that were coming to their churches would like enjoyed that medium. So, so again, it's like, yeah, what's the motivation behind it?
And I, whereas my church gave out CDs to everybody and I was like, I don't own a CD player.
Yeah, nobody owns a CD player anymore.
I don't have one in my car. Well, I think I do now, but the car I had at the time didn't have one. I don't have one on my computer, and I don't own one.
They just needed to put a link on the in the bulletin so you would know where to go download.
Yeah, I mean, it was available digitally, so I just went and downloaded it. But
for sure,
yeah, I mean, it's just the other thing that comes out of this is oftentimes we sing new songs at church that are written by worship leaders from other churches, so they're not. Yeah. They're not your big record label releases.
Totally.
Or like the, you know, the Hillsongs, the Bethels, the whoever is, you know, used to be like Vineyard back in the day, like those big worship networks, Passion. Yeah. It's not one of those. It's coming from a Matt Boswell. It's coming from an Aaron Ivey or, you know, and or the worship leaders they lead with, who they write with. And those are often just, they're awesome songs. And they're much more singable too, because they're not designed for performance as much as they are corporate worship. So I don't know. I like it.
Dude, I think, you know what it is too, though? I mean, you brought up a good point, but I think when people hear like musicians and recording, they immediately go to, you know, they immediately go to music industry with it. So There's automatically in people's mind this thing of like, well, why are you releasing something? Is it because you want to be famous? Is it because you want everyone to hear it? It's like, well, no, I do want everybody to hear it. The only reason why you would ever release anything is because you want as many people as possible to hear it.
Right.
Like that's just common, you know, why do it?
Except this podcast, we do this with no expectation or intention of anybody listening to it.
So the fact that we do have a decent amount of people listening to it is just gravy, right?
But yep. Utterly accidental.
Totally. And to me, like, that's what it is. Like, I want as many people as possible to hear the podcast. I would want as many people as possible to hear a worship album or anything that I do. But again, the motivation behind it is, I think, especially in a church context, if you're doing it to serve your congregation, yeah, do it, man. I mean, like, it's going to make for ultimately better worshipers, especially if they're more keyed into what it is you're singing on Sunday, rather than hearing a song once every 4 weeks. They really know it. You know, right. I don't know.
Let me pose this question: is it, if you post your church's sermons online, or you have a podcast feed? You know, so at our church, we have, you know, an Emmanuel Church podcast feed. You can subscribe to it. So, you know, by Monday morning, you can get that week's sermon. We also live stream it, which, you know, not every church does live stream. A lot of churches do podcasts because it's free, basically. Yeah. What's the difference?
I don't think there's, except
like cost. It costs more to put out a decent album just because of editing and production and that kind of thing. But
you're not doing that every week either, right? So that's a one-time thing. I don't know. I don't see any difference with it. See, I don't know. So I have released so many things in my life that to me, it's not even something that goes through my mind. Like, if you have something to release, I don't know, release it. If you want people to hear what you're doing, release it. I just, you know what I mean? If it's a money making thing, and then, but I don't know what's going on in somebody's heart when they release something, what their motivations are.
I think the only reason this is a question is because the idea of worship music has been co-opted by the commercial side of things. So the churches who are releasing the albums are doing what the church has been doing forever. When the Wesleys wrote hymns, when Isaac Watts wrote hymns, when William Cooper wrote hymns, when Ann Steele wrote hymns, they were releasing those as hymnals for the church at large.
Totally. Yeah.
When, you know, Columbia Records gets a hold of a Christian artist and decides to commercialize them and they call it worship music, that's a bastardization of this thing. It's not a, that's not worship music, and then we're trying to jump on that train. Like, they're trying to sort of co-opt a thing that's been good for a long time.
Totally, man. It's just edification. I mean, like, Jesus wanted his words released, right? That's why.
Yeah.
That's why we read the Bible, right? So it's like, as many people as possible to hear good content. I mean, like, let's get it out there.
Right.
I mean, that's my philosophy on it. I mean, I just don't care. I mean, I can't judge another person's motives. So that's between them and the Lord. But like, man, I can't imagine any sort of like argumentation about whether I should release my, it's like, well, if you don't want anyone but your congregation to hear your sermons, well, don't release it. I don't know.
And most churches don't. In terms of like their music, most churches don't do albums, but if you have it, do it. It's great.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So why not?
So you made the point of, you know, we want to spread good content out there. We want as much of it out there as possible. Let's make a quick turn into bad content. Because why not? I would like you, Ronnie, to give me a defense for why people should watch 8 seasons of softcore porn. And by that, I mean Game of Thrones.
Wow.
If you couldn't tell, I have a bit of a slant and an agenda in this question.
Pipe, I'm so glad that I don't watch GOT, man.
You'd be very triggered right now, wouldn't you? As I'm sure some of our listeners are, they've probably tuned out because they're like, ugh, these conservative blowhards. But here we are.
Dude, yeah, it's a great question, man. I mean, it's a really great question because yeah, I don't really get it. I watched, so I'm going to, full disclosure, man, I think one time, and it may have been on a plane, I don't know. It was when I was hearing all the, oh, dude, Game of Thrones, you know, like all the hype, right? All the got hype. And I think I watched like a quarter of an episode one time because I was like, all right, you know, let me see what it's all about, you know? And I remember I got through literally, I don't even know if I got through a quarter of an episode, but I remember thinking like, dude, hold on. I mean, this is a lot of stuff that like I should not be exposing myself to.
Yeah.
And again, it was just some random, I mean, it was nothing. It was nothing I even searched out. It was just something that was there. And I said, well, let me check it out. And it was like, oh, I can't watch this. You know what I mean? And it was, the content was, I thought the content was just insane.
Yeah. So I've never watched a full episode. I've watched snippets here and there, just, you know, clips that have been out there. I've tried to watch an episode, ran into the same thing. But here's the thing. I read the books up to the ones that have been released. I think the story in the show has now passed up where the books are. And after reading it, I was like, oh, I should not see this on screen. This is not a good idea. Yeah. I'm not even sure I should have read it. They were brilliantly written and great stories, which is why people love them, because it is one of the best sort of epic storytelling things in existence right now. And it's not childish. You know, like Harry Potter was brilliant in its own right, but it was aimed at kids, basically.
Yeah, it's children's stories, but
yeah. This is grown up that. I have yet to hear a compelling argument of why it is a good idea for Christian people to watch that level of, I mean, just it's just rampant with the sexual content, the nudity, there's rape, there's incest. It's not just like there are some scenes. You know, we make that joke about a lot of things, you know, things you can sort of skip over, whatever. It's just woven throughout. And the only thing I've heard people praise the good aspects of it as if that outweighs the bad. Okay, I understand that it's really well written. And in terms of sort of filmography and the way that it's shot and acted and everything, spectacular. Got it. I haven't heard anybody say that stuff is all defensible. The best you get is it doesn't really affect me, or the other stuff outweighs it. Is that even a compelling argument, or are people just rationalizing?
I don't know. I think that's it right there, because I think like we've come out of an era of Christianity where, you know, if we go back far enough, there was that whole, you know, it was coming out of that bubble, you know, that evangelical bubble where it's like everything, we can't partake of anything that doesn't exist or was that originated within the church because, you know, it's secular and somehow, it's not something that's going to edify us on any level. And so I think we've made some strides coming from that, because there's a lot of artistic things that we as Christians should dive into, that we should embrace, that aren't super provocative, that can be edifying, even if there is a sense of you know, even if there is a, even if there is parts of it that, that may be of a little provocative, you know. So I think on that level we can enjoy certain things that can, you know, have a bit of a you know, can be a bit edgy. But I think like there has to be a line, right? Where we have to pull back and we have to go, okay, but this isn't like, this is not doing anything good for my heart on any level.
Right.
Because again, I'm a human being and I'm susceptible to things, you know, changing and reshaping my heart. So I again, like what that line is, I mean, to me, it would be really hard to make a compelling case that from just an artistic standpoint, that is justification for you to dive into what I would say, like pipe, like calling it softcore, I think is being really generous with it as well, softcore porn. I mean, dude, it's like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And so, and I think Kevin DeYoung wrote an article that like last year on this one, that you're a couple years ago when the
to be
new
fair,
season,
if you started it, then you're probably still reading it, but you know, it is 1100 pages long.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, so on one hand you can go, well, okay, I don't have the conscience to do certain things, but I have the freedom to do other things. To me, this one is just on any level, I would argue with anybody that this one just goes to beyond, it just goes beyond that, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing is I have this like gut visceral reaction against drawing lines that are like for other people and saying that's just a no. I mean, obviously you get to things like pornography. No, that's not okay. You know, illegal substances. No, that's not okay. But other than that, I mean, most things I look at and I'm like, there's a matter of conscience. There's a matter of judgment. This is one that, it took me 7.5 seasons of this show, but I'm finally at a place where I'm like, I think the line is no.
Yeah.
I think the line is just that the compilation of what's in that, the good doesn't outweigh the bad. And I'm not a prude and I'm not trying to be heavy handed. The other thing is listening and watching young guys try to defend it while doing just a masterful tap dance around the issues of like the effect that watching nudity has on them. They just won't even address it. They won't even acknowledge that it's an issue, except that bloody everybody knows it's an issue. And so it's just lying. It's lying to themselves. And that's, I think, what has finally pushed me over the edge is watch guys just essentially just like throw their hands over their eyes and be like, I'm not seeing what you're putting in front of me. La, 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 la. You know, I'm not listening kind of thing. And it's just, it's asinine. It's there. I can't get around that one anymore.
Dude, no, I know. And like, I think like there's two things that struck me about what you just said, man, is that like on one hand, yeah, we came out of that era where we don't want to sound prudish. We don't want to say, hey, it's not like it, man, it's, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, man, we got to be able to watch stuff that goes beyond the Smurfs, even though I was never even allowed to watch the Smurfs. Right. But like,
say, so, that one had a wizard in it. That's questionable.
Correct. But I mean, but at the same time, I mean, I think a lot of the people that – a lot of my friends, right, that come from, you know, the industry that I came out of, I think if you can put an artistic tag on something – in other words, if something is a great film or it's something that's sort of a must listen to because like musically, you know, it like checks off all of these like boxes because it's amazing and it's artistic and it's – you know, there's a lot of – you know, there's a lot of – ingenuity with the production, all those types of things, somehow like that in and of itself, like justifies, you know, the listening or the exposure to it. And so on one hand, you're like, well, yeah, I don't want to be prudish about that. And, you know, I want to be able to like watch something that, or I want to be able to listen to something on a particular level, whether it's production or whether it's lyrical, whether it's musicianship, or whether it's filmmaking or whether it's acting. I want to be able to appreciate that, because there can be a benefit to that. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a particular line where you just go, that's just not healthy for me, though. Like, well, that conjures up things in my mind, in
right.
my heart,
yes.
that's going to take me to a place where I got to stand before God and I got to say, like, are you okay with that? And then have to – yeah.
And the question of, like, what is being set forth as sort of normative and acceptable and good. You know, there are plenty of really good movies that have nudity in them. A good in the sense of like it's you can make a good justification for why people who follow Jesus should watch this. Now, either that you look at one short scene and say that's a thing that needs to be skipped, or you can kind of explain what it's doing in there. Something like Game of Thrones is it's great. Basically, it's just normative for there to be sex, to be nudity, yeah, to be, you know, whatever. It's just sort of, it's like the context, the backdrop. And that's exactly the kind of thing that we would say is problematic about the porn industry, like the over-sexification of society. Except that in this case, because it's got the art label on it,
exactly,
we call it okay. And the thing is, I think people need to remember that art is not amoral.
Exactly.
It can be, but art promotes something. It shares a message of some kind. And so it feels so intellectually and spiritually dishonest to hear Christians defend it. And I'm kind of surprising myself because I didn't realize I felt so strongly about it until about 3 days ago. Well, probably about the start of season 8. And just the,
yeah, well, because everybody's going bonkers over
and
it has yeah,
taken over my social media feeds, which, you know, I'm thinking about going the way of Ted until the stupid show is over. And it's just everywhere. And then hearing Christian people defend it, and I'm just like, that I don't get you. And I try not to be judgmental. I'm certainly not a legalistic person, but that just seems like a line that I can't figure out why you decided to just triple jump right over.
I know, dude. Well, dude, yeah. I mean, Piper, I'm not going to judge anybody if they're geeking out on the new season and all that. I mean, because I'm not having a personal conversation with them. I mean, this will probably be the extent of my personal conversation with anybody about Game of Thrones, because I don't watch it anyway. And honestly, you know, my closest friends don't watch Game of Thrones anyway. You know, it's just not a topic of conversation. But yeah, but when it's all over, and then when you feel like, in other words, like it does something, like it's strange to think that it does something weird to my conscience when I'm viewing somebody on social media thinking, that's so strange they would watch that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it doesn't mean that I'm judging them at all. I just think like I'm making a judgment on it as a whole, saying your heart can't handle like what that show's dishing out.
Right.
And I just believe that's true. And it's not because I'm more sensitive or I'm more spiritually mature. It's right. Like, no, I would make a value judgment on that and say, I don't believe anybody can withstand, you know, the temptations and the imagery and all of that.
Nobody, don't control the images that stick in your head. I'm not a psychologist, but when you see things, you don't get to choose to forget them. You don't have a hard drive that you can just go in and like move that file to the trash. That's not how the mind works. So like when you see naked people or graphic violence or whatever the thing is that will kind of imprint itself on you, it's there.
Yeah.
And I think it's a profound lack of self-awareness by a lot of people to recognize that they are stocking their minds with this stuff, and it's going to be to their detriment. And the other thing is, maybe they just don't care. There are some people, well, there are plenty of people who just don't care. But yeah, I don't know. It's of great confusion to me. And it seemed like something that would be worthy of bringing up on the podcast to kind of talk through. I wish we could get Ted's opinions on it. I'm sure he has some thoughts too.
Dude, yeah, I think a lot of it is just being like, If I'm going to look at my own life, you know, there's probably things that like I've become calloused about, like whether it's things that I see or things that I listen to or things that I read. I don't think much about it, maybe because I've engaged in it for so long. And that's probably the same way with Game of Thrones with some people. They've watched it since season one. They've gotten used to the imagery. It's something that doesn't really, you know. It's something that doesn't even, you know,
are you,
it doesn't
are you
cause
moving,
them to be reflective
about it. Are
you
moving it towards neutral, or are you saying that's a bad thing?
No, I'm saying that's a bad thing because, like, anything that we let our minds anything that we let our minds and our hearts, like, standardize.
Yeah.
When especially if you're a believer, you have the Holy Spirit, there's a particular kind of sensitivity there. Something's not going right, you know, internally,
right,
if we've gotten to that place with anything. And again, it doesn't, I mean, dude, it can be, we know that. We know that anything can become an idol. Anything can become something that we can't live without. Anything can just sap all of our affection. And if that's one of those, in other words, the question I would like to ask is, hey, are you able to just stop watching it? You know, and
yeah.
if, You know, and that's the question that you have to ask somebody. But somebody could ask the same thing of me and other areas that are probably a little less provocative, right? Are you able to stop eating that? Are you able to stop like listening to that? Are you able to stop, you know, loving that particular thing that you love, even though it might kind of seem fairly neutral? Well, I don't know. If I can't, then that's kind of the question we're asking. What kind of a
right?
What kind of are we enslaved to it?
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question. I mean, it's the kind of question we should be asking about anything. Yeah, whether it's technology we're addicted to, or work habits, or working out, or food, or alcohol, or watching, you know, watching shows. But there is something different about just content that is pretty explicitly out of bounds for a Christian. Like, this is outside of a thing that God would consider good. So food is a neutral that we can turn into an idol. Porn is bad. I mean, I don't know. Dude, at the risk of stating the obvious.
Porn is bad. Dude, I love it. Like, all this stuff, man, all we need to know about porn, Pipe, is that porn is bad.
Don't participate in that. It's bad.
Dude, I love it, man. I love how, man, we're really dadding out right now, aren't we?
I know. That's what I feel like. I feel like my dad is yelling at me through my own voice right now, and it makes me uncomfortable. But yeah, also, I think we might be right.
I feel fully yelled at. Yeah. I feel like super guilty for watching Game of Thrones, even though I've literally never watched it. You know?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, we have done what we always do, and we have wandered to and fro. And for listeners who have been with us for a while, you know that we have a standard sign off. But we've decided to set that one aside. Both because we've used it for a few years, but also because Rachel Held Evans in the last couple of weeks has been in a really serious health condition. You can find more about it online, and needs our prayers. And we've used her name as a joke for a variety of reasons, but this isn't a joking thing. So we're gonna refrain from using her name as our sign off anymore. So until next time, I'll leave you with this, listeners. Girl, wash your face.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Is life feeling chaotic? I get it. I'm Rachel Wojo, host of the Untangling Life podcast. Don't miss the passionate encouragement and faith-based resources you need to help you clear your head and calm your heart. As Shell says, it feels like Rachel always knows what I need to hear. She keeps it real and is so humble. Her podcast is just the cherry on top. Enjoy Untangling Life with Rachel Wojo on lifeaudio.com or your favorite podcast app now.